It's the election policy that's got tongues wagging right across WA. I'm talking about the $5 a ton iron ore levy that Nationals leader Brendan Grylls wants to hit major miners Rio Tinto and BHP with. According to Mr. Grylls, it's a fair way to ask the big players to chip in and repair the state's budget.
I expect them to fight back. I just make the point that the iron ore price is pushing up towards $60 a ton today. The all-in costs, in the company's words, are less than $30 a ton. If you take $30 a ton US clear profit and multiply it by the 600 million tons that's being exported, that's $18 billion US profit out of the Pilbara exports this year. If you multiply that by 1.3 to turn it into Australian dollars, it's way in excess of $20 billion. That's why we think it's possible to have an argument around the 25 cents increasing to $5 a tonne. We believe that we're prosecuting that argument strongly. It's important to bring the state's finances back to a level of stability so that we can continue to invest and grow the state. And that's exactly why we're prosecuting the argument.
But as we've heard from the Premier Colin Barnett right across to the other end of the political spectrum at the Greens, it's a policy that's received little support outside the Nationals party room. The whole policy rests on a 25-cent charge that's written into state agreements between the WA government and the big iron ore miners. The agreements, dated back to the 60s, mean that big iron ore players have to pay the government 25 cents for each tonne of iron ore they export from our state. But could it be the case that this very charge is unconstitutional and could be crushed if the miners took it to court? That's the claim that was made last week by Greens member for the mining and pastoral region, Robin Chappell.
If you suddenly raise the issue of this 25 cents lease rental being upped to $5, then it's like poking the bear, in my view. There is the good opportunity, and I think that the mining companies will be looking at this right now, of challenging any such hike in a rental as being an excise and only administrable by the federal government.
Lorraine Finlay is someone who takes a close look at constitutional law. She's a constitutional law lecturer at Murdoch University. Lorraine Finlay, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Are there grounds for mining companies to argue that this so-called rental fee is in fact unconstitutional?
There absolutely are grounds. It's actually a really interesting question, and when you look at it, it looks as though not only is Mr. Grill's proposal highly vulnerable to constitutional challenge, but in fact the entire levy dating back to the 1960s would potentially be vulnerable as well.
How would it be vulnerable to challenge? What part of the Constitution challenges this rental fee?
Well, it's Section 90 of the Constitution, and Section 90 provides that only the Commonwealth Government has the power to impose an excise duty. So Western Australia doesn't have the power to charge excise duties, and the concern with the production rental levy is that it's really an excise duty dressed up as a levy. And if the High Court held that that was the case, then the levy would be constitutionally invalid.
So what do you mean when you say excise duty?
Well, an excise duty is effectively a tax on the production, manufacture, sale or distribution of goods. And what the High Court has done is taken a really broad view of what excise duties are, and in a number of cases in the last 20 years have actually found that things like tobacco retailers' licence fees, franchise fees and various business fees that were imposed by state governments are actually excise duties in reality and have ruled them to be unconstitutional.
So in essence, if a state government steps in at some stage along the production chain and tries to skim some money off the profits being generated, then it runs the risk of being classified as an excise duty.
That's exactly right. And what the High Court looks at is how closely the fee is tied to the goods. So if it's actually a charge paid on the goods itself, then it generally is an excise duty. And in this case, when you have a look at the actual state agreements, the 25 cents per tonne that Mr. Grylls wants to make, $5 per tonne, is tied only and exclusively to the amount of iron ore that's produced or that's mined. So there's no way of avoiding the fact that it's a charge levied on the good itself, and therefore it seems to fall squarely within the definition of an excise duty.
Lorraine Finlay, how does this charge, which is a very specific part of state agreements applying just to iron ore miners, differ from the royalties system through which the state government gets money from miners?
Well, from a basic constitutional perspective, they're chalk and cheese. A royalty is not, technically speaking, a tax. Instead, a royalty is the charge that you pay for access to that property. So it's the price that the mining companies pay for actually digging the minerals out of the ground and, in effect, purchasing that property from the state government and from the people of Western Australia. Whereas the production rental levy appears on its face to be a tax. That is something that's paid over and above the price of the goods and something that goes to the government for receiving, in effect, nothing in return.
Is there any precedent for companies or businesses using this section of the Constitution to smack down a state intervention or attempt by a state in Australia to impose a tax on them?
Well, there is, and certainly there are a number of cases, particularly in the 1990s, where the state governments found High Court decisions removed something like $5 billion in revenue from the states almost overnight. In a case called Ha versus the State of New South Wales, the High Court ruled that a tobacco retailer's licence fee that most of the states have been charging in different forms was actually unconstitutional, and that case really broadened the definition of excise duties and gives us the definition that we have today, which is why it does look as though the fee proposed by Mr. Grylls would be in some constitutional trouble.
So what was that Ha versus New South Wales government case about? What was the New South Wales government trying to do that the tobacco company didn't like and ultimately was able to squash in court?
Well, that case concerned a tobacco retailer's licence fee that the New South Wales government charged, and it was the validity of that fee under Section 90 of the Constitution that was challenged in the High Court. And the High Court ruled that it was an invalid excise duty. And the definition of excise duty that they applied in that case really broadened out what everyone had previously thought an excise duty was. It was a much wider definition. And it meant that a whole variety of licence fees, franchise fees and business fees that state governments had previously charged were suddenly called into question because they seemed to fall squarely within this definition.
I guess the question that poses itself is, if it looks like this has been unconstitutional from day dot, why do you reckon it is that it hasn't been taken to court by the miners?
Well, I think one of the main reasons is because when these agreements were first put into place in the 1960s, the High Court took a much narrower view of what an excise duty was. So it may have been at that point in time this wasn't something that so clearly fell within the definition. After the case of Ha and New South Wales in the 1990s, that definition has broadened. And so now that we're talking about increasing the amount of the production rental levy, people have taken a new look at this, and it seems that now it does fall within this much wider definition. The approach the High Court took in Ha with the tobacco retailer's licence fee would be the approach they would likely take if they were asked to rule on the validity of the production rental levy. And now that the levy is being proposed to move from 25 cents per tonne to $5 per tonne, it really has got people looking at it again and looking at it and realising it may well fall foul of Section 90.
Yeah, it looks like last year the 25 cent per tonne rental fee brought in $120 million of revenue to the state government. And when I was doing some calculations, it looked like increasing it to $5 a tonne, you know, on that basis would then result in $2.4 billion. So I guess there's a big difference there. Do you know roughly how much a legal challenge would cost for mining companies to launch? I'm just trying to, I guess, see. Would they be saving money in the end if they were sparing themselves $1 billion?
Well, legal challenges are certainly expensive, but they generally don't fall into the realm of $1 billion. And I guess when you're talking about why this is happening now, when you look at the previous, well, the 25 cents per tonne payment that's in place now that raised approximately $120 million in the last year, that's compared to $3.4 billion in iron ore royalty payments in 2014-15 that were paid to the state government. So this rental levy has been a small component of the taxes and charges that mining companies have paid to the WA government to date. But when that lifts to $5 per tonne, as Mr. Grylls is proposing, it suddenly becomes a much larger component and certainly something that the mining companies would then want to look at a little bit more closely because it does become a much bigger part of the charges that they do have to pay the state government.
Given that your assessment is that this whole charge in the State Agreement Acts is quite vulnerable to a legal challenge, I mean, what do you make of the proposal to increase it to $5 a tonne?
Well, from a constitutional perspective, I think it's problematic because there is the potential that it could be found to be an excise duty. And obviously that will have an impact then on the state's bottom line, because it won't only stop the increase, but it will mean that we can no longer charge the 25 cent per tonne figure that's currently being charged. But in addition, beyond the constitutional impacts, there are obviously a range of economic impacts of an increase like this. When you look at the possibility that WA will be seen as a venue with increased sovereign risk, when you look at the problems in terms of discouraging investment, and when we put this into the context of big mining companies currently facing a much more volatile environment, an environment that's certainly a lot less conducive than it was a few years ago. And so really anything that discourages growth and discourages investment and causes any risk at the moment is something that's going to have an economic impact for the people of Western Australia. I don't think it's as simple as saying we'll charge them more and therefore the WA government will get more money, because what we're actually doing is putting a block in place that will stop investment and discourage mining companies from working in Western Australia and promoting growth and jobs in WA.
Fascinating to get your insights this morning, Lorraine Finlay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.